It's US Open week, and we are going to build some winning lineups today, right here with you, DFS Army, Dead by Noon podcast, US Open, third major of the year. Let's go. What up, what up, what up, everybody? It's your boy DFS Up North, aka Josh Thomas, here with another DFS Army Dead by Noon podcast. And like I said, it is US Open week, and we are going to build some winners together today. Let's get into it. Like I said, stick around. We're going to do like 150 max build. I'm going to show you how I use sort of the domination station at the DFS Army to even take that like 150 max build and then find lineups for a single entry. You know, maybe I'm going to throw a dart at the Millie Maker, right? Because long-term, not super, you know, not a super successful thing to chase unless you're willing to play those $150, $20 lineups every time. But, you know, I don't hate throwing a dart in there at the Millie every week. But it is the U.S. Open, and we are heading back to Cali, with Notorious B.I.G. for the U.S. Open. And we are at LAC. See this week, Los Angeles Country Club. If you go to dfsarmy.com right now, you can get this course preview that I've got for free, right? I also included a video. The guys over at the Fried Egg do just such a good job with their breakdowns of these like major tournament venues. Talking to Gil Hance, who is the restoration architect here, but LACC, it is a beautiful par 70, about 70, what do we got? 74-35, I think, or 74-21. Can play it a variety of different lengths, which I'm actually excited about. There's some sneaky tee boxes on some of these par threes. They can move up some of the par fours, make them drivable. There is a lot of ways that they can attack this course this week. But LACC, right? Private course, George Thomas design in the golden era of golf, 1927. And that work was later redone by like US Open Dr. Gil Hance, right? Who obviously we've heard lots from lately. He's redoing Colonial right now, which I'm excited to see what happens there. But Gil does a really good job. And the thing that I like about Gil Hance is that he almost always tries to bring the course back to what it should be, right? And over time, LACC obviously still like a very prestigious club, but it had kind of grown over, and there had been some issues, and even, you know, 2017 Walker Cup, it wasn't quite what it is today, right? But it is a just a beautiful course, and it is going to be a very interesting test of golf. Like I said, par 70, but with that par 70, we are doing five par threes this week. One of the par threes is going to play up to 290 yards, which is insane. Bent grass greens, first time that we've had Bermuda grass rough since 2005 at Pinehurst, which is interesting, and it is a thick. If we go here, you can see hopefully this brings me to the Twitter account of the USGA, who just kicked off US Open week with a little video here that shows you how thick the rough is. My guess is obviously they don't keep it this thick, but you can see how lush that is. Yeah, see you later, right? Good luck. And obviously you're going to want to avoid some of those areas. They will cut it before then. You're not going to see guys get lies like this. With that Bermuda rough, though, it can kind of lay flat depending on the area and just kind of how it grows. So you're not always going to get a terrible lie in the rough. Like I said, it's not always going to be the worst thing that you've ever seen like that. The course starts with a very, very easy par five. You're going to, if your guy is starting on number one, you are going to want to make sure that you are seeing at least birdie there on number one, and then be ready for the bogey on number two, long 500-yard par four. One of George Thomas's, you know, keys to design. You see it here. You see it at Riviera, which he's designed as well. Bel Air Country Club, which we'll see the U.S. Women's Amateur at this year. Starts you off with a getaway hole, a par five that you can feel good about yourself, and then he smacks you in the face with one of the toughest par fours on the course right away in number two. You can see kind of from this picture what the kind of the contours and stuff like that look like around here. There's not a, they have these dried riverbeds or creek beds that kind of run through the course as well that are a hazard. it's the green complexes. This molar sort of complex is something that is pretty standard in George Thomas designs as well. There's not a lot of run-up areas. Everything is going to be pretty well protected. The front nine plays more of like a parkland type of course with the trees. As you get up on the plateau for the back nine, the wind is really going to come into play off the ocean here. You can see some just beautiful views of Los Angeles, but the wind will definitely come into play. And on some of these holes, you are going to see real three-shot par fives, depending on what the wind does this week. Right now, it doesn't look like super windy. We're talking 9-10 miles an hour. Obviously, the afternoons, we're going to see that pick up a little bit no matter what, just because where we are, but 70 is going to be fairly nice. One thing about the bunkers is JT said this week that there is just like an inordinate amount of sand in the bunkers. They are going, and he is going to, or he's trying new sand wedges with different bounce, just because there's so much sand in there that you're sinking so much. So that'll be maybe something to keep an eye on this week. How I see this course playing, right, is I think you need to be very, obviously, anytime we play an event that has rough like this, I think you need, the distance is going to be an advantage. It is not the end-all be-all. Will we see short hitters in the top 10? The answer is yes, right? I have no doubt about it that we are going to see, guys like, for example, I'm trying to think of somebody who's really short here. Brian Harman, right? Not the longest hitter in the league, but could he contend here? Yeah, absolutely. But the way I see it is that you need to be long. You don't need to be long, but it's a big advantage, right? Just putting yourself further up the course, even if the rough is the same, if you can hit a lob wedge in or a sand wedge as opposed to a 7-iron or an 8-iron into these greens, that's obviously a huge advantage, right? So strokes gained approach is going to be there as well. I think the course's design puts a significant premium on approach play with the greens and the bunkering around them. So we want guys who are good with their games. But I think there's potential that we see that sort of even out where we're not going to see guys approach that like 70-80% green regulation. And if all the guys are around like 50-60, then it becomes that great approach play sort of gets leveled out. And we see some of these guys that are really good around the green, some of these guys that can scramble. So, I think of a guy like even a Justin Thomas, right? Eclipses wedges so well. A guy like Sahith Theegala, who's great around the greens. I think that could be a big time advantage. And then I think that, I want to look at par five scoring this week. You need to make hay while the sun shines. And here's the thing with par five scoring, right? Guys who are good par five scorers are also pretty good par three scorers, right? Because they are better long iron players. They go for the green in two, or they're very good, like a Patrick Cantlay. Patrick Cantlay is one of the best par five scorers in the league, or the PGA. He does not often go for the green in two. He often lays up and just relies on his wedge game and makes birdies, right? He's not a guy who's going to make a ton of eagles, but he is going to make some birdies. So I'm looking at par five scoring this week as well. Gil Hance, right? I have some stuff in here about like his redesign and the renovation work, but Hance said that he thinks that somebody who is very cerebral thinks about the way that they're going to play this course, where their leaves are, things like that. When I think cerebral, I really think of all these guys are cerebral, but I think of two players, right? I think of Matt Fitzpatrick and Jordan Spieth. Those are the two guys that really come to mind for me when I think of that type of player who sees kind of where, where you miss, where you land, where that ball ends up, where it runs out, as opposed to, not that Dustin Johnson isn't cerebral. I think he's more cerebral than people give him credit for, especially when you watch some of this stuff where it's like playing with the pros or something with Liv the other week I watched where he kind of went out and was playing holes. He sees the game very well, but he simplifies it very well. So a cerebral golfer is who Hance thinks is going to win this week. And for me, I'm going there a little bit as well, right? I'm looking at my core here in a second. But before we get there, if you want to become a DFS Army VIP and get access to my full cheat sheet, get access to the research station, things like that, the domination station, which we're going to look at here in a minute, you need to become a DFS Army VIP. And you can use the code SUMMER for 50% off your first month. Summer 50, sorry, it's 50% off your first month, which is just a wild deal. You know, we look here, guys who are coming in hot, right? Tyrrell Hatton, nobody hotter in the league right now. Obviously, Scottie Scheffler is pretty close, but Hatton's just been playing so well. Charged up the board on Sunday at the Canadian Open. Had a poor Saturday that kind of hurt him, you know, but guys like Victor Hovland, obviously to par, I think, minus 27 in the last three majors, which is insane. Six strokes better than anybody else and has nothing to show for it except for a win at Memorial. Adam Scott playing really, really well right now. Golfers with great U.S. Open history, which, I mean, we're obviously playing different courses every year with the U.S. Open, but I think you can give a little bit of credence to this just because, you know, the USGA sets it up every year. Mike Wan sets it up. The courses are going to, you know, the results are going to be similar. So if you're playing well at the U.S. Open, that's a good sign. And obviously, the guys who are the best of the best are right up there at the top, led by Xander Schauffele, who I love. A cheapy guy who's had some good U.S. Open history that I like is Harris English. So, again, I said the weather is going to be nice. It's a really interesting course. I suggest that you take a look at that video. Just watch it, like, even just to get a feel. Like, I'm excited to see how the guys play some of these holes, because there is a lot of different decisions that they're going to have to make. A lot of these fairways are cantered left or right, and you really need to ride the ridge on some of these holes with your drive to not end up really in the crap or blocked out from the green. So it's going to be a test of golf. My, you know, having to make a guess right now, I could be proven wrong because these guys are so good. But I'm going to say winner is minus 11. That is my guess right now. And if I was leaning, I'd say the under. But I don't know if it's going to play as hard as maybe people expect, but it's going to be tough. All right. Typically, if it's going to play really, really hard, the players are going to bitch and moan all week about it. And most of the stuff that I've been hearing from the course is that guys really like the course this week. So they feel like it's a fair test, which I think is what most golfers want. They don't want something that necessarily is like, oh, it's only going to advantage the bombers here, or, you know, it's a putt-putt contest, right? So again, our projections here, our U.S. Open Research Station, we've got, you know, the price, how many shot link rounds we have in the guy, the aggregated win odds, if there's any sort of drift in those numbers, what we have for an ownership projection, which we're going to look at here in a second, fantasy points, our value, which is just projected fantasy points per $1,000 of salary, event history in the U.S. Open, recent form, made cut percentage, driving distance accuracy, greens and reg, things like that. But really anything you want. We also have showdown tools that show, you know, their field adjusted showdown points, their field rankings for that, how often they're hitting a bogey free round, strokes gained individually over their last 10 and 20, field rank tracker, you know, what percentage of the field are they beating on average? Like this is just an insane run from Scotty here. So at 98%, 98%, 99, 97, 93, 89, 100, 97, 91, 100, like nobody's better than Scotty right now. And he's putting awful. If we look at strokes gained, you know, Scotty's at the top here. We can see, like, look at this awful putting. Like, he's doing that. He's being 98% of the field and losing minus 1.5, minus 1, minus 2.9, minus 3.2, minus. He hasn't had a positive round putting in the last two tournaments, which is just insane. Like, and he's finished third, second. He had a positive round putting at the PGA. That's such a bonkers concept that he is playing that well and not putting. But again, it's the story from there this week is that he's not changed putters, is that he's still struggling on the greens. I saw Rick Run Good or Rick Gaiman rate that, you know, he was hitting circles around Xander, and I don't even know who else he was playing with, but just on the greens, he struggled again. So he's an interesting case this week. What do we do with Scotty? Well, for me, right, it really comes down to with Scotty, I want to, we got to make a copy of this so that we can sort. It comes down to, all right, what is he going to do? Or like, what does he need to pay off, right? And essentially at this price tag, I think he needs to win. For Scotty to be in the nuts, unless a random win. So if we get like a 7K guy that wins, then the ownership doesn't really matter, right? But right now, I mean, obviously we've got to expect that somebody in the top 20 in the world is probably going to win, unless it's a live guy that just lost points. But, you know, we're currently projecting Scotty at 22%, right? Well, if I can get Rom at 7% less, for me, that's probably where I'm going this week. You know, not saying that I'm going to have zero Scotty, but as we see when I build here, I might try to cap it at like 10%, right? So I'm going to be half the field. It only takes one lineup, right? I'm not making a full stand and saying I'm not going to play Scotty this week, but the putter is a little scary here. And these green complexes are tough. But looking at the ownership percentages here, is there anybody that really jumps out at me? Obviously, we're expecting Hatton to be popular. We're expecting Brooks to be popular. Justin Rose is way too cheap. Ricky, too cheap, right? Those are the two guys that jumped out at me early on. I really like Cam Smith at 9K. I think 12% is too low for me. I'm going to push 24%, 20, try double that up, right? Finau, I don't love. Matsuyama, I don't love. You see this little drift percentage that shows you that he went from a 36-1 odds to open now to 39-1 odds. So there is, you know, people aren't betting him and they're betting others around him because they're not confident in his game. Who's drifted the most? It's usually at an event like this, it's usually like somebody rando, like Truslow. Yeah. Like, I mean, you go from 2,042-1 to 1,607-1, you're going to jump a bunch. Austin Truslow chips with one hand. I probably will never bet him. But Lucas Hebert, anybody up here? Oh, okay. Russell Henley, really like him. And we're currently not projected to be owned very much. I'm a big Russ Henley guy this week, but nobody else really crazy in there on that ownership or the drift. And typically, like, obviously these guys aren't going to garner much ownership, but typically if we see drift, that means like positive drift. That means that a guy is going to likely be higher owned. Okay. If we see negative drift, it means that there's not many people interested in him this week. So guys like Cage Lee, right? Nobody's interested in Cage Lee this week. Pablo Larrazábal, though. Ooh, I am intrigued. I am, he's won twice in his last three events. Morikawa drifting backwards, which is a little surprising to me. We're only projecting him at 8. I think people are going to see this number. And that's the hard part, too, guys. You know, we see this happen all the time, especially in a major week where there's lots of content. People got stuff on Sunday, Monday, Tuesday. These numbers are going to change drastically because everybody and their mother is going to put out their content and they're doing the same thing that I am right now. And they're going to go, oh, 8% Morikawa. Yeah. He's the sneaky GPP play this week. And all of a sudden you lineups lock on Thursday morning. You look and Colin Morikawa is 19% and you're going, what the hell just happened? Well, That's industry swaying, right? So I always take this with a grain of salt. When I see a guy that, you know, is especially a guy that's like a little bit higher owned typically or up in that salary range that is trending towards a lower percentage, we'll see him kind of jump the shark a little bit and be under owned. English drifting back. Matsuyama's drifting back. I don't love that. But Fitzy, I like Fitzy drifting back. If I get Fitz under 10%, it's smash the like button for me this week. If you look at our cheat sheets, just to give you guys an idea of what it looks like each week, I break it all down here with showing you the safety, what my expected MME exposure is. And that is, like, I'm putting in here everyone who I think is a viable play this week. Some of these guys like Cam Young, right? Like, I'm going to write Cam Young up, but my GPP exposure is going to be 0%, right? Because I think he's just not playing well enough for me to consider him, right? And there's some guys that I write up like a Sungjae. Like, I think Sungjae is viable. I don't think that you should get any more than 3-6%. But even as we see here, I'm going to build 150 in a minute. I'm not, like, he might not even end up in my player pool, right? These core guys that I love. So my core this week is Xander, Fitz, Hatton, Rose, and Scott. Those guys I'm going to have at least 30-40% of, if not more, right? You know, I like Russell Henley. He's in my cash core as well, but 15-20%, that sounds about right. So I'm not going to give you away my sneaky guys at the bottom until we get into the domination station. But, you know, for those of you who maybe read my cheat sheet weekly, that gives you a little bit more insight into my thoughts, things like that. So just because I got a guy in there doesn't necessarily mean that he's going to end up in my pool, but he might. And sometimes, and usually I'm pretty good about, like, last week, I wrote in there that I built in the DS and I ended up with more Doc Redman and I can't even remember who else, somebody else. Maybe Austin Smotherman, right? Because I have said this before and I will say it again, that the domination station is smarter than me. So if it's pumping a guy in a bunch, maybe we'll see that here in a minute. I am going to listen. Okay. So this is how I am setting up the domination stations. So I don't touch salary range. I don't touch fantasy points range. I don't touch the salary cap. If you're playing in, like, let's say the mini max, okay, or the milli maker, and let's just assume that we are this week, I don't hate dropping a little bit below. All right. And the reason being is that $400 likely doesn't make a huge difference in your lineups in terms of, like, your exposures, but it's like, it's going to make you a little bit more unique. But at the end of the day, maybe that gets a little bit too down the rabbit hole. Like, I want to build the best lineup that I can. So if I split a milli with somebody, guess what? I'm going to be okay. I use tournament mode projections to uniques. I'm not forcing anybody low ownership, but I will touch the randomization. So the randomization, what that does is that, like, so currently, you guys can make me do math here, but currently Scotty is projected at 92, let's just say 92.1. Give out my calculator here. So it's going to, when it builds lineups, it's going to give Scotty somewhere between times 0.2, 18.4. Okay, so 92.1 plus 18.4. It's going to give him a projection randomly somewhere between 110 and minus 18.4. Man, I'm so bad at math. About 110 and 74, right? It's going to give you that wide range of projection, right? So that top 1%, right? That 110 is likely a winning lineup, right? But that 72, he probably doesn't hit value, right? And the reason, and we know, I like that because it gives you a little bit more unique lineups, right? Maybe something that you wouldn't necessarily go with. So if I'm building 150, okay, typically what I'll do is I need to stack between, let's say, 1 and 4. Of who are my guys in my core this week? Let's say Xander, Fitzy. Who else? Justin Rose, Adam Scott, and who's my other? Let me go back here. My other core play? Oh, Haddon. There we go. Oops, that's DraftKings. All right, Haddon. I just type it in here. In all my lineups, okay? I don't have to do this, but again, I want to make sure that I'm getting some decent exposure to these guys. I always set an exposure max of 60. I may end up bumping somebody if it feels really good, but I don't always do that. The second thing I do before I start liking and loving everybody is I'm going to scroll all the way to the bottom, and I'm going to start unchecking guys that I don't love. And this is maybe the spot where you can adjust their projections a little bit. But for me, I don't hate just coming through here and Xing out all these guys. And also, you know what happens sometimes is, like, I spend all week on this, right? And there are times that I do this and I go, holy shit, he is in the field this week? And then I've got to redo things. And but the first guy that I'm not going to uncheck down here is Gordon Sargent, Vanderbilt University. Pounds it. We played him a bunch at the Masters because he made everything work. He makes everything work here again. Get some exposure to him. I'm actually going to just throw a min on him right now. I want him in 10% of my lineups. Aldrich Potgieter is somebody who I maybe would consider, but for this video, we're not going to get him in my 150. Olin Brown Jr. can play. Dad was a great player. Thor Bjornsson, love Thor Bjornsson. We played him a bunch last week. Mueller, no. Gunn, no. I don't mind Brent Grant. I actually, this is now we are at that time of life where we are coming through here, and I'm going, shit, Brent Grant's in the field. I don't hate him. Yo Ishikawa, still not gonna play him. Dion, no. Paul Barjon, no. Frankie Kapan, no. And Klebiota, Ross Fisher stays in because I've spent so much money on Ross Fisher over the course of my career. But David Horsey too, man, there is some Euro studs in here this week. Martin Keimer, no, he's coming off an injury. No interest here. He does seem a little bit smug about the LIV stuff though. Lara Thobel's won twice in his last 2 weeks, but we're going to keep old man Padre in there. Absolutely. Ryan Gerard can stay in. And again, we're going to throw a little like on Romain, my boy. All right, Sam Stevens, Ortiz. Is there anybody in here that I really don't want to play? Jens Dantorp. I'm not really in love with Sebastian Munoz finishing third in his U.S. Open. A couple of these guys I don't love. But other than that, like, there's not a ton of guys that I'm like, holy cow, I'm not playing this guy. Svensson's probably one of them. Charlie Hoffman's for sure one of them. Buckley, Rogers. No, I don't ever play. No, I mean, I'm not playing Sergio. I'm not playing Phil. I'm not playing KH Lee. Probably not playing Luke List. I'm going to give him some love. I'm not playing Aaron Wise because he is not good. I hope he does better, but not interested right now. And again, then I'll just go through and I'll throw some likes and loves on guys that I'm interested in this week. Mito's a guy that I'm pretty intrigued by this week. I think that he could definitely be in the nuts this week. Abe Anser's been so bad. Can't play him. Taylor Montgomery, so bad. Can't play him. I know that I'm going to get a bunch of Scott, so I don't necessarily have to bump his projection. Guy, it's weird. It's a weird week. I feel like I'm kind of on these live guys, right? I don't love Cam Young and Jason Day, so guess what? I'm not going to play them. All right, let's build some lineups. You don't have to get too funky with it, right? Especially like your first time through. See what you get and then go from there, right? That's my strategy, okay? So what I ended up with was, okay. All right, I said I like Bryson. The DS heard me. I don't like Bryson 40%. All right, so I'm just going to throw a cap on here that I know I can get double the field at 20%. Guess what? Don't need more than that. Let's see. Got a ton of Scott. Got a ton of Rose. Probably a little too much Mito. I'm just going to throw another 20 on him because I don't think I need to be more than that. More importantly, like, who am I not getting? That's maybe the biggest thing that I need to see is I'm going to come down here and I'm going to say, all right, where are guys that I really want in my lineups that I'm not getting enough of? So Sihi Thigala. I love Foxy this week. I'm going to put 12% on him. Don't love Sungjae. Don't love Homa. I'm not in love with Kitayama, Lowry, Morikawa. I'm going to leave Finau for now. He might be out on the next cut. I'm going to take Gary Woodland out right now. I'm going to put in 20% Cam Smith. And this is going to change everything, right? Okay, so now here's the deal. Fitzy is a core play. He's not showing up. What do we got to do to get him in more? Hovland, Kepka, Xander, core play. Need more, right? And again, you just massage the DS until you go. I'm going to maybe run this one more time just for the sake of this video because we're getting a little bit long already. But it's you got to take some time. It's not going to be a end all, or it's not going to happen right away, right? Okay, so now we go. We're seeing that we're getting 30%. All right, this number I don't like. Siwoo. Big Siwoo guy, not as much this week. I'm going to throw a 10% on him. Love Fleetwood. Don't mind 20% Scheffler. But I did say that I would rather go Rom here, right? So if I know that I'm getting that much, I got to go up a little bit on Rom. Patrick Reed, I'm getting a decent amount of Hovland, English. And like, you got to think too, like if you're building 150, if I'm building 20, which is typically what I do, right? At Harris English at 9%, I'm like, oh crap, I need more. But then I look and I'm like, oh, he's like 14 lineups. I get on board with that. Anybody sneaking in here at the bottom that I don't love? No, I mean, it's fine. I'm not sold on Peters. Maybe I can take him out. I'm trying to think. And that's the hard part too, is like, then I got to go back through and say, all right, who am I missing? Right? Who is not showing up in my lineups? One more time here. Oh, Mike Kim. Yeah, we got to get a little bit of Mike Kim in our lineups. Carson Young. Yeah, baby. Oh, yeah, I knew. I wrote that in our notes. I wrote in my notes that we've got to give Car Daddy some love just for him to show up in our lineups because the projection's not very high. Mike Kim, I do love. Am I getting any Romain Langesque? Let's see here. So the lineups look good. I don't love Ricky Fowler being my highest owned player, especially because he's going to be fairly chalky here. But I'm going to throw a 10 on JT just because I want to be at least at the field on him. And then we got to go down and throw some exposure on some of these guys down here who I really like Romain Langesque, big fan of. I want some Sam Stevens. Really was excited to play him at the Canadian Open and he qualified for the U.S. Open and withdrew. I'm going to throw like 5% on Mathieu Pavon and 5% on Pablo Larrath. We can go 10 on Pablo. He's won twice. Why not? All right, this is the last time through here. Then I'm going to show you what I'm going to do to pick lineups that I think are good for like the Millie, right? Let's say that. If I'm just going to throw like a single dart here out of these 150. Or if I just want to play like 20, right? You can do that. Okay, so I'm still getting a lot of Ricky, Xander, Justin Rose, Adam Scott. Here you go, right? My core is right there. Hatton. Gosh, okay, we're going to run this one more time because I'm going to be mad if I don't get 30% Tyrrell Hatton in my lineups. Ooh, now it's going to give me zero. All right, one more time for the kids. All right, 7:15. Got to get her going here. All right, now Hatton becomes my highest home. All right, that's okay. Scott dropped a little. Jerks. All right, this is fine, though. I'm getting Larrathabal. I'm getting Longesque. I'm getting a little Pavon. All right. This is not bad. Okay. So what you can do is, so we're currently sorted by like fantasy points, right? So my highest projected lineup is 406.5 using all the cap. 442. And my total projected ownership is 80-88%. Don't mind that. This one, total projected 68. Let's see. What I want to do is I want to scroll through my top 10 here and say, okay, what's my lowest ownership percentage? So if we go back to that 67, right? I go Brooks, Cantlay, Rose, Bryson, Stevens, Langesque. Not a bad lineup. If I swapped Brooks out, which I could, let's say I just go Brooks to Rom. It's really not, it actually lowers my ownership projection down to 64. But it does drop my projection a little bit, but I don't care. That one's a little bit easier for me to swallow here. And you can actually, or you can just go here and sort by, like, everything's going to be close, right? In terms of fantasy point projection, the DS is not going to give you like something ridiculous. So my highest is 93. If we go all the way down to the bottom here, hello, can you go? Okay, we can get a 51. All right, so let's see this, like, 50% lineup. Not bad. Rom, Spieth, Thomas, Scott, Carson Young, Pablo Larrathabal. Like that. Rom, Fitzy, Lowry, Bryson, Russell. Like, there's nothing wrong. Like, again, if I was just going to throw a dart in the Millie without hand building it, this is kind of what I would probably end up with, right? I want to get some of these guys have no ownership, right? I'm trying to bink $1 million. Now, if I was going to play something like a 3-entry max with, you know, how many entries? With 2,000 entries, then I'm coming up here and I'm going, all right, where are we at? For my highest owned lineup, right? I want to eat a bunch of this chalk. What's it look like? So for me, Xander, I mean, really kind of looks like my core here, which is why that looks the same. But like, how good does that lineup look for a 3-entry max? Right? Like, you eat that all day, that balance build. So again, I hope this was helpful. I'm so excited for the US Open. It's going to be a fun week. Again, if you're on DFS Army VIP, you want more access to these tools, you want to be able to do the things that I'm doing here, use that code up north for 10% off VIP membership. Or actually, no, pardon me, summer 50, 50% off first month. Get it, hit it. Let's go. I'll put the link down below. And make sure that you like and subscribe. Have a great US Open week, guys. I will see you in the Discord. Cheers.